Hello and welcome to the Two Time Labs podcast. I'm Francis Wade, and if this is your first time listening, welcome to my podcast where I interview thought leaders in the area of time-based productivity. Join me as we hunt for ideas from the latest, newest research in time management and personal productivity. If you'd like a summary of some of these ideas right away, check out my book, Perfect Time-Based Productivity, available on the Amazon bookstore. In this episode, I have an interesting chat with Penny Zenko, who is an expert in energy management. In this wide-ranging interview, we look at the power of using your physiology to be productive, using your language and self-talk, developing a purpose, and finding focus. These are all aspects of life that must be managed in order to make the most of the short time we have here on Earth. So, tune in. Don't switch away. Listen into my conversation with Penny Zenko. Hi, and welcome back. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, today we have a very special guest, Penny Zenko. You've just heard all about in terms of her bio. Penny, welcome to Two Time Labs podcast.
Thanks for having me, Francis.
It's great to have you. I've never had a conversation live on the air or on my podcast with someone who is an expert in energy management. So really interested to see where our conversation takes us.
Yeah.
And maybe you could start with telling us how did you get into the field of energy management, energy and time management? Because I know you dual specialize.
Well, when you say dual specialize, let me start there for a second. In my opinion, productivity never was and never will be measured by time. And so I really don't believe, and I think I've heard you say this too, is, you know, time management doesn't really exist. And we have to use the term because that's what everybody else is familiar and comfortable with.
Right.
But at the same time, we all know that, you know, it's BS, right? We don't really manage time. So,
right. You
know, so in my philosophy, it's, well, what do we measure? What makes a difference, right, in the way that we are effective and efficient, and in my definition, those two together are productive, and that's energy. And you know, you asked the question, so how did I get there, right?
I
think it's I started my own IT business back in 1996, and I built that business from just me to a multi-million-dollar business, and I sold it, and you know, before, when I got into the coaching world, you know, I was looking at, you know, what led to my success? You know, how did I wear all those hats? Because it's, you know, there's no doubt it's not easy. And today it's, you know, we're bombarded with even more. And so, you know, I took a look at what were my practices, and also as I was a coach for Tony Robbins for many years and worked with different people around the world, I looked at what their practices were, because that was the number one thing that people came to me with, and I'm sure you get this all the time too, was, you know, I don't have the time.
Right.
Right? That's the first thing.
That's what they say. Right.
So we can't even work on strategies of the business or any of the other things that we need to do, because we need to address that myth first.
Right, and then and they can't schedule time with you, and because they don't have time, and
right.
They schedule time, and then they miss the appointment because they don't have time.
Right. It's a vicious cycle. So that's how it came to be of this energy, because I realized that it's really about how we show up for the time, and if I looked at what the core components were from myself and from the others who were seeing great success, it was, you know, a combination of elements that I brought together saying, this is how we manage our energy. This is how we show up for the time. And this is how we're able to create that level of focus. This is how we're able to block out distractions. That's all about how we manage our energy.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like what's a little bit similar to what people are calling attention management. Is that similar in some ways?
Well, you know what? I think there's overlap in a lot of these different ways of looking at things. So I've seen some of the work around attention management, and I'd say yes and no, right? There's mm-hmm. special twist here in the way that I look at things, and I guess, you know, that's what keeps people interested in the different philosophies is that everybody's looking at things a little bit differently, and it's going to click for somebody, you know, somebody who's on this podcast, what I have to say today, or, you know, the great principles that you bring through, it's going to click with them, and it's going to create an open a perspective so that they can, you know, really implement it.
I was a great fan of Tony Robbins at one point. I think he was the very first personal development book, or I listened to his tapes and mm-hmm. read his book at the same time. It was the first thing I had ever sort of really done. Mm-hmm. And I did the 30-day program, and I remember driving to work and listening to the tapes, and he'd say, pull over the car, do this right now. And surely, you know, as I look back at that, having very high energy and using your physiology to, I guess, show up in a peak state was a key part of his philosophy and his approach. Sort of being able to pay attention to your physical state, your emotional state, all these different ones he outlined. And then to go past noticing to managing and manipulating almost. Mm-hmm. I know you have a Tony Robbins background, but I'm borrowing a bit from my experience to sort of understand, is that similar to what you do in some ways?
Yeah, in some ways it is. And obviously, you know, Tony was one of my mentors, and so, you know, a little bit rubbed off on me, of course, right? Mm-hmm. And I do define physiology as one of those core components because, you know, and it's not only Tony Robbins that's saying this. In a lot of studies, you see, if just take depression, for instance, one of the mm-hmm. key things that helps people to shift away from depression is their physiology, is what their, you know, some of the common things that they have people doing is starting to move their body more, right? Doing more walking, mm-hmm. Doing exercise, more breathing, because those mm-hmm. things, there's a philosophy of physiology first, that when we change our physiology, that changes everything. And anybody who ever, you know, has exercised and then afterwards felt really great, right? It releases dopamine in our system. So it's actually, you know, a proven chemical reaction that it releases those positive chemicals in our body to our brain to give us that boost. So it's important.
True. You know, I experimented a little bit with coffee drinking in the last year or so. So I never drank coffee up until recently, and I never liked the smell, tasted it, it was awful. And then I read somewhere that early in the morning, uh-huh. and I was rising at about 3:30 every morning to write my book. And, uh-huh. and then I realized that the first half an hour or the first hour, I'd be a little bit dopey, in the sense that my brain would be like half asleep.
Tired.
I'd end up doing some nonsense like getting on Facebook because I wouldn't be all that focused.
Right.
So I read this thing about coffee and I said, you know what, let me give it a try. And sure enough, it worked.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big time coffee drinker. I drink one cup twice and maybe three times a week on the mornings when I have to do some kind of very creative task, like write a column or do some kind of creative activity. So only in the mornings and only one mm-hmm. cup. Part of it is when I'm trying to make sure I don't drink so much that I have to keep drinking more in order to get that boost.
Right.
So I don't drink it before exercise. I don't drink it before meetings. I don't drink it if I'm going to be on the road. It's only for this sort of creative activity. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, you know,
it works.
Attention follows physiology.
Attention does follow physiology.
I mean, is that a good example?
Well,
I saying this?
I don't know if that's a good example, but I mean, you know, it is in lots of different ways, right? Because what we put into our body makes a difference. Is, mm-hmm. you know, in that it's caffeine, and caffeine gives you that focus. You know, if I chew gum, and that's known for people who have ADD or who've been, you know, I hate to use those types of labels, but, you know, people who have difficulty staying focused, chewing gum, for instance, and that's a physiological effect. And it can have a positive effect and a negative effect. So, you know, if you look at all the drug ads and what we're putting into our body, and then it says, oh, by the way, you could get this, 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 and this. So what we put into our body affects our physiology and the way we move our body. Like if somebody is stuck, like, you know, they just like not moving forward and they're stuck, you know, the first thing I have them do is get up and get out of their seat and move around. And it's amazing that when they're stuck and then I ask them the same question when I have them get up and move around, is they're able to find greater clarity. So, you know, physiology is very, very important to giving us the boosting our energy in the way that we want it to be.
Okay. And is that the primary lever that you use to help people to manage their energy, the physiology?
It's one of four, right? One of four.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in sports, one of the books that I think is an amazing book that I was really inspired by after I had already come up with this whole framework, I started to be, you know, how our brain works is that I started to see more of other people talking about energy management. So Jim Lohr and Tony Schwartz wrote a book called The Power of Full Engagement. Mm-hmm. And they talk about in their energy management, and they used to work with a lot of people around sports. And so they talk about very big into recovery, right? So that's all about our physiology too. Just like when we're working our muscles, we work them hard and we stretch them, but then we also need to give them adequate time for recovery. And that's
like taking a nap, you mean?
Yeah, Einstein was a big nap taker, right? I mean, it served him.
I'm a huge nap taker.
Took
one this morning.
That's great that these new companies or these companies are adding in sofas and day beds and things like that is because they're trying to promote exactly that recovery so that people can be flexible, have that recovery time, and then come back fresh and creative because it matters. So physiology is definitely one of the key things that we start with, but there's also three other components that I believe make up our energy management.
Before we get into the other three, what's the state of the research in terms of the difference that physiology makes in terms of our performance? Is the research clear cut or is it kind of?
I think it is pretty clear cut. Now I know you're big into the research side, and I wanted to bring good statistics and whatnot. And I'm not a great researcher, but if I took the research that Jim Lohr and Tony Schwartz were using from their book, you know, they're showing absolute performance through all the studies and people that they've worked with through through the physiology, through taking these breaks, through meditation. Also, Heidi Hanna wrote a book called The Sharp Solution, and she also brings out some really great statistics about studies that were done that said that I'm looking one up right now just to
sure.
Can't talk to it if I don't look it up. It's not the way my brain works.
Real time.
But that she was talking about that taking breaks to maintain memory, for instance.
Uh-huh.
And so that was done in Dr. Zhen Yan and colleagues at the State University of New York in Buffalo. So that was an example where they had a significant loss of glutamate receptors, right?
Mm-hmm.
Response to repeated stress. And so, you know, as mm-hmm. we work and we don't take our breaks, it is affecting our cells, mm-hmm. and they're able to clearly see that, and they're able to see then the impact that it creates in terms of the stress hormones that are released in our body. As I said, and when we do move, right, we're creating dopamine and serotonin that are positively impacting our body. So there's a lot of great research out there, even in the happiness psychology.
Okay.
That I'm sure you're familiar with, like
Gretchen Rubin and.
Yeah, you know, they talk about the fact that just the fact of physiology, a smile, that, you know, we release those chemicals again as a smile. So it's almost impossible to be angry, let's say, when you're smiling. So because and when you're smiling, and this came from the Happiness Advantage, Sean Acor, and he talked about, you know, that basically the studies show, again, physiology first, that they were training with some people to smile when they would find themselves getting angry, and it reduces the arousal and really then addresses and takes away that fight or flight that we go into. And we get angry. And so, you know, it was proven through studies that people were able to shift their, and I'm going to say it, their energy, right? Because that emotion of anger is an energy that's being given out. And you're going to get completely different results when you smile. You dissipate that that anger, that fight or flight, so that you can really access problem-solving skills. Then you're going to be able to be so much more productive in your conversations, right, when there's a conflict, and get the results you're looking for faster.
Right, right. Now, knowing that I work in companies where you can't take a nap because that's, you know, the nature of the company's culture.
Right.
And I've found myself sort of falling into this kind of stupor, I would call it, where I'm not as sharp, but I'm not taking a nap. So the rhythm is sort of into this stupor zone and stay there until 5 o'clock.
Well, but
and then go home.
But the thing is you don't have to take a nap to in order to recharge, right?
Uh-huh.
You can take a walk outside. So, you know, I'm gonna put that back on you, right? You've gotta have flexibility and multiple ways to be able to rejuvenate our energy. And it, you know, if you sit in the same chair all day, you're gonna get in the stupor zone. There's no doubt. You know, if you're just the only time you get up is to go to the bathroom. So, you know, it's good practice, and they say that, you know, the best interval is 90-minute intervals, 60 to 90-minute intervals, to get up, take a break, drink some water, so feed your physiology in different ways, drink some water, take a walk around the office. You can always, if you've got an office with multiple floors, take the stairs. You've got, you know, people say, I don't have the time to take a short break like that. Give me a break. You're not that important. You're not in brain surgery, you know, where you know, every second counts, you know, that you're in there and you can't close up his brain.
But we like to think we are.
We like to make ourselves so important. Everything is so urgent. We live in this, like, urgency society. And all it is these emotional impulses that we need to control and say, you know, that's BS. I'm taking 60 seconds, and I'm going to take some deep breaths, and I'm going to take another 60 seconds, and I'm going to walk down the hall and stretch, or, you know, go outside for a minute and get a fresh air.
But it sounds like what it takes to create those options is some kind of inner awareness, back to that term we used before, so that because if the options are available to you, but you're not aware of entering the stupor, for example, then you wouldn't know to exercise them. I had a little pop-up. I don't know where it went, but it was on my laptop for some time. It would tell me when I had been working for, I think it was 90 minutes without taking a break. And it would pop up and say, it's time to take a break.
Then you hit the snooze button.
It was really useful. I was shocked, you know, because of course it would interrupt, you know, my being in the stupor.
Right.
And I would say, has it really been that long? And sure enough, my internal clock wouldn't register that I needed a break, but my body would. But my, I guess something went wrong, and that my head wouldn't know what my body needed.
Right.
We need as much help as we can get, not just in terms of which options to exercise, but also to know when the time is right to, just like you said, we're at the end of the 90 minutes. We it's now time to take at least a 10-minute break. What kind of break would be best for that moment? If you're lucky, your company offers you every kind of possible way to rejuvenate. If you're not so lucky, you have to go create them. But if without the awareness, you don't have choices. So maybe that's like a huge part of it, no?
I think that's a great statement that you just said, is without awareness, we don't feel like we have choices. And I would agree with that absolutely, is awareness always is the first step, right? You can't make any kind of change if you're not aware. And so I guess that's why we're out there helping people to be aware, hey, you got to manage your energy, and here are some of the tools and ways to do that. So like you said, that was probably a tool that reminded you every 90 minutes.
Right.
And so we need all the help we can get, because we're designed to follow the path of least resistance. And also, you know, to these impulses that become these negative habits. And so we need to control our environment. We need to turn off the bings and the buzzes and the things that are distracting us. We need to take a look at, okay, in my environment, how can I you know, control the distractions? How can I set up things to make it easy to make those breaks? Like you said, maybe a reminder or a, you know, maybe even the company has certain times. When I lived in Zurich, Switzerland for 16 years, you know, one of the things I loved was that they had at 9:30 in the morning, and because people got there like really early, like at 7:30, and then they had at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they had the Tznuni, which was 9, it's called 9, and the Tzviri, which is in the afternoon, and they would meet in the cafeteria to have a coffee or a drink or something, and that would be kind of a social time, but also a time to catch up informally on meetings and questions that you might have, and it got them away from their desks. So, you know,
like a collective coffee break.
That's right. And the advantage to that collective coffee break, you know, some people would say, oh, that's really unproductive. Well, maybe it's not, right? Maybe it's exactly making it more productive because you know you're going to see so-and-so this afternoon, so I don't need to actually go across and ask and bother them while they're working. I'll just ask them in the afternoon. So it gets rid of some of those last, you know, those got a minute meetings that interrupt you all the time throughout the day.
It gives
you that break that you need, which is to do that automatic recovery. And they're at specific intervals. So, you know, just different ideas that companies can do to help people to build in that rejuvenation. And it could be something that you do for yourself as well. You know, go out for a walk at lunchtime. You know, maybe choose 3 times a week not to meet somebody for lunch or to meet them for a walk, right? So different things that we have to set up ahead of time. Yeah, I know you're big into this. It's about planning. You got to plan for your success.
Right. I mean, maybe there's also an aspect of self knowledge, no? Because I take naps, but my wife doesn't. So that the nap prescription, which I love, for her is, you know, just a way to it puts her into the dopey zone, worse than the stupor. she hates taking naps because this doesn't work for her at all. Is that we essentially need a way to sort of understand ourselves and our own energy levels, because I think we're talking about an individual phenomena for the most part. Notwithstanding the Swiss, maybe their culture allows them to all operate together, but don't we have different needs? Like, you may need a walk and I may need a nap. Somebody else may need coffee. Somebody else may just need to be fired. You know, don't we all have different needs and need to adjust accordingly?
Yes, and I think that we also individually need to find flexibility. So even though we all have individual needs, you know, I think that we adapt, right? If you can't take a nap, there are other ways that you could do that. You know, maybe a short meditation. But yeah, absolutely. And that's the case with in any solution that you're looking for. That's why I said that, you know, you have an approach, I have an approach, someone else has an approach, and depending on the individual needs, different people are going to resonate with each of the individual approaches. But the self-awareness is really important. It's important to know, well, what are those things that you need to rejuvenate? Try a couple different things, see what works for you, and note that. See what times of the day are most energetic for you. And what types of work are best to do during those times. Like you said, you wake up really early in the morning to write, or you used to. That's a great time for me, too, to get really great focus and concentration. And later in the afternoon is a good time for me to make calls, because when I make calls, that's how I build energy. I love talking to people, and that builds my energy. And so that awareness of what you're doing during the day, when you're doing it, and what are the optimal times to do it is a great realization around your energy as well.
Yeah, it appears as if as time has gone on that we've become, I guess more aware, more smart, more aware, more self knowledgeable. We know more about ourselves, because I look back to when I started working, when I first entered the workforce in 1980s or whenever, and certainly these what we're talking about was not a topic of conversation then.
Right.
It just didn't exist. So that's it for physiology. What are the other three levels that you mentioned that you also work with?
Well, one of the things that leads into what we were just talking about in that awareness aspect is the language and the communication, the self-talk that's going on within ourselves, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. it's a lot of times it's the stories that we make up, you know, mm-hmm. the excuses, the stories that we get so caught up in where, you know, that works for other people, but it doesn't work for me. And so we give ourselves these excuses and these outs. And we need to look at our language patterns and the questions mm-hmm. that we typically ask ourselves and upgrade those questions. So build a different awareness around what our typical thoughts are and really look to adapt the questions that we're asking ourselves, you know. So mm-hmm. is this the highest and best use of my time? Like if I feel like I'm getting overwhelmed or I get caught up in a rabbit hole, I say, okay, what do I need to focus on next? Right? Mm-hmm. The question mm-hmm. that you can ask yourself in the moment when you realize that you're off track, that's so key to help you to manage your energy and stay productive.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds as if self-awareness and self-knowledge are also important there.
Well, I think it's a big part of it. Yeah, I think it's intertwined, you know, is that as you become, it is self-awareness to become aware of what your self-talk is and what, because a lot of people aren't aware.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as you said, you need to be aware in order to then make that change.
Right, right. Well, if I look back at my own sort of example, I think that over the years I've gone from having no understanding of myself, self-talk. I've tried a bunch of different things, all of which worked.
Mm-hmm.
In how can I say this? It's a little bit like, for me anyway, like climbing a ladder, where whatever works for me today works, but then I'm always on the lookout for the next thing that'll build on mm-hmm. the level of capacity that I have now, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been a bit of a self-help junkie, you know, starting with, like I said, Tony Robbins, and done a whole bunch of different kinds of methods of discovering my self-talk. But the one I use more now than any other, I guess, is I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Byron Katie.
Oh yeah, sure.
So she has a very easy method of asking 4 questions, and
right.
And
is it true?
Right, exactly. Absolutely, no, it's true.
and what I love about her questioning there is it's so simple, and it doesn't, it's not complicated, doesn't need to be complicated, but it brings immediate awareness. And I use 4 questions that I got from one of my mentors, Steve Linder, in combination with Byron Katie's. Is it true? I think that's those questions are really great.
Can you share those with us?
Sure, absolutely.
Are they proprietary?
Well, they're Steve Linder. To give him credit. He basically took the neuro-linguistic programming momentum model that Tony Robbins used, and talked about, you know, how our results can either spiral in a positive way mm-hmm. because we have our just quickly to give that in, and then I'll give you the questions, but it goes together, is that, you know, our potential is really determined by the actions we take, and the actions we take then determine the results that we get, and the results that we get further reinforce or create beliefs, which then go into our potential.
Okay, that makes sense.
Right? And so, yeah, that makes sense. So you either are taking positive action, getting, you know, positive results, reinforcing positive beliefs, and that's increasing your potential, or it can go the other way where you're not really taking action, you're not getting the results you want, and therefore you're reinforcing the belief, see, I told you I can't do it type of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Then you're decreasing your potential. Well, these 4 questions in that context help you to basically take any result and make it a positive result. Something that's going to serve you and serve others. So the first question, which has helped me tremendously in everything that I do, and I only realized after I heard him state the questions that I somewhat used to do this on my own, but not consistently. Then having the framework gives you that consistency to always do it. And so the question is, what does this mean? And just like Byron Katie, you can't ask it just once. What does this mean? The first one might be the little devil on your shoulder that comes back and says, it means you're not good enough, right?
Right,
okay.
Right.
Hold on a second. What else could it mean? And what else could it mean? And so what we're doing there is the same thing that I understand Byron Katie does, was, is this true? Is this absolutely true? And I think, I don't know them by heart, but I think that's the way they go, is that you're taking a step back and you're questioning the question. So you're getting some a disassociation to it, moving a little bit of the emotion and getting the full perspective so that you can really see, okay, which one of these, they're all true. I mean, the fact is, they're all true, right? In the fact of you can give a meaning to anything. You can pick any one of those if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you have a choice to say which meaning is the meaning that I want to choose. By saying,
is that a second question?
No, that's the first question. Is what is this?
Still the first question. Okay.
And then.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the second question is, you know, what can I learn from this?
Okay.
Right. So it's not just identifying it, because that's, you know, that's important, but then it's really taking the learning out of it. That brings you to the next level, let's say. So the third question is, how can I implement this? Because, you know, it's not enough just to learn it. You know, we in organizations, I've seen this all the time, after a project goes on, that, you know, they sit around and they talk about what they learned from it, and I don't know how it's possible, but a year later they have the same problems that happened in the last project that happened again in this project, right?
Exactly.
So it's not just enough to identify what you've learned. It's really very important is how are you going to implement it and really hold yourself accountable to implementing it. And
right.
The fourth question is almost around that, holding yourself accountable how to implement it, because it's how do I share this? Because when we learn something, I've found, you know, you said you do a lot of self-development, so do I, and I found that as I share what I've learned in, like, the group sessions, I find that it really cements it for me, you know, and brings that learning to, and that as a part of who I am, like, it just deepens it. And then,
right.
And then also it's a gift for other people, because I know I've heard other people talk about what they took away from something, and I was like, wow, yeah. And then that, you know, has an impact as well. So that how can I share this is really important as to, you know, really make sure and implement that learning.
Right. I think it's a copy that says that if you really want to see if you know something, try to teach someone else what it's about. Is it copy?
I'm
some other smart person.
I'm sorry, say that again. I didn't catch that.
Stephen Covey?
Yes.
I think he said that if you really want to see if you really want to learn something, try and teach someone else how to do it.
Oh yeah, I'm sure that it
was it him.
I don't know whether that was Stephen Covey, but I've heard it several times, and I think even more importantly is I've experienced it.
Right. I also did a lot of training at Landmark, and one of their key ideas is that when you give something away, you re-experience it as if you were doing it for the first time.
Uh-huh.
Kind of the idea.
Uh-huh.
And I've experienced that also.
Yeah.
Because you've got to sort of, you're trying to have the person have the experience. As you try to have the other person have the experience, you have the experience also.
Absolutely.
It's a double benefit, I guess.
Absolutely. That's why I love coaching, because it really is.
Right. Right, right. It's a reinforcement as well as a gift.
Uh-huh. It totally is.
Awesome. That's really interesting, these four questions. You know, it's great that sort of we're evolving, I guess, to the point where our self-talk is becoming more transparent to us.
Uh-huh.
It's hard to imagine being effective in life without having any idea of your own self-talk at this point. In our development, that wasn't the case just a few years ago, I don't think.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that it's always been the case. I mean, if you look back at, you know, the leaders in self-development and whatnot, you know, Napoleon Hill, I mean, they're all talking about that awareness of self-talk. And so I think that it's always been there. And the people who have been majorly successful in their lives and feel fulfilled and happy are people who have, you know, have that awareness.
But it still seems to be sort of in the domain of the highly aware, like yourselves. So, for example, people who are sort of working on themselves, because the everyday discourse isn't about, so, oh, you're feeling bad. What's your self talk at this point? It's not a question we ask each other, you know, just like that. It is the key, but it's always been the key. It's just that we haven't talked about it as if it were the key,
right?
And even then, it's maybe like the people like Tony Robbins and others whose message is sort of becoming mainstream, maybe.
Well, yeah, and I think that you know. It's getting it out there with the media that we have today, right? The outlets. I mean, that's definitely my mission, is to have people be more aware and be able to control the meaning that they're giving things, because that is the key to productivity. That's the key to managing your energy, is what meaning you give to it. And the physiology supports that. You know, as I said, the language supports that. And then, you know, the other two elements then also support that.
That makes sense. So that's our second of the four levels, and we have about 10 minutes to cover the last.
Okay.
Two. So.
Well, we could also keep people in suspense.
Oh, you're terrible. But tell me, are these four levels all mentioned in your book? Just curious.
They are. There's actually the four aspects. These four core drivers of energy management are in my book. They're in the first chapter called Championship Psychology. And then there's also six other core drivers that then, after you've built that foundation, then work on top of that.
Okay. Well, let's can we spend the rest of our time looking at the other two?
Absolutely.
Great.
So one of them is purpose, right? And that's where we get the connection to the heart. So, okay. You know. It's so important that we understand why we're doing things, why it's important to us, because that's where we get rocket fuel from, right? I mean, why does an Olympic athlete go to what they go through, you know, in terms of training? They're really connected to that purpose of winning a gold medal and doing something amazing that's going to inspire people, right? And why does an entrepreneur, many entrepreneurs, they start their company with the passion of purpose. And that's why small startups, they work so great together collaboratively, because they're all passionate around the purpose.
You mean the big why?
The big why. And I believe that there's, and I go into this in my book, there's a little bit more than just the why piece that make it the rocket fuel that it is. But it really is. So it's tapping into that passion and purpose.
Is that the deeper aspect of purpose, passion?
Well, I think that passion comes from having a purpose. And I believe one of the few aspects that I talk about in my book are the challenge aspect. You know, if you look at where people are really impassioned, it's where there was a stretch where they were pushing their comfort zone. So to me, that's got to be part of purpose, is reaching beyond. And then another component that I believe is very important as part of that is the aspect of outside of self, is who is going to benefit from that outside of yourself. So there's a certain, you know, for somebody who's driven to make $1 million, there's a certain passion, I'm sure, for that. But I'll bet you that passion increases tremendously through the people that I know, that it's a different type of passion when it's going to benefit someone else, when they're doing it so that they can give it to a charity, you know what I'm saying? So when we get outside of ourselves, that's where we also tap into a deeper passion and purpose and clarity.
Well, I can speak for my own self, but I suspect it's true for all of us that we'll do more for
yes.
a big cause involving others than we would do just for ourselves, because we, you know, we could get pretty happy just hanging out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. That's why we need external accountability. That's why I go to a personal trainer. I mean, I would mm-hmm. definitely not push myself if it was just so I have to set that up in my environment because I want to be pushed.
Right. Right. And having that extra person involved changes the nature of your purpose and your commitments. Right.
Right. Absolutely.
Hmm. Hmm. Okay. And then the fourth, I forget what you call them, but I call them levels because I couldn't think of anything.
Right, they're core drivers.
The fourth core driver.
So the fourth one, where am I here? So we did physiology is, the last one that we haven't talked about is focus.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that there's three, in order to really be laser focused, it's not, most people think of focus as attention. Right? That goes back to your question earlier where you said, so is this a matter of attention? And I believe that there's three levels to being really clearly focused, and they're intertwined with the other core drivers. So the first one out of these three is strategic focus, is to know what it is, you know, and that taps into that purpose. It's understanding, you know, what's the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
The second one, because you can have like a really great, huge vision, but the second one is mental focus. So I might be an Olympic athlete and I want to win the gold medal, but coming back to the self-talk and whatnot, so if my mental focus, if I'm always focused on what I don't want, or I have a lot of negativity or negative self-talk, beating myself up, you know, any of those types of things, then I'm actually self-sabotaging myself. So even though I might have this dream, that's all it ever becomes is a dream, is because I'm always pushing myself down, not able to get there. And,
right.
You know, and that's why athletes choke in the under pressure. It's, you know, it's difficult, and they need to keep that mental focus in the right place. And then you have the attention, which is the third level, which is then doing what you need to do in the moment to align all of those, you know, those three things together.
Right. Right, because without the last one, you would never get to the other two, I guess.
Yeah, they just work in collaboration together, you know? I mean, you can have mm-hmm. each individual one separately, mm-hmm. but you don't get the same level of productivity and performance if unless you have all three aligned.
Right, right, right. Great, so the four are physiology, language and self-talk, purpose and focus.
Correct.
Awesome. And just to remind our listeners, the name of your book is The Productivity Zone, Stop the Tug of War with Time, written by Penny Zenko. Penny, we're actually at the end of our time together. It just seemingly just zipped away from
us. I know. I could talk to you for hours. We could, like, you know.
I know. We could just pick a topic and wheel, couldn't we?
Totally. It's a lot of fun. Thank you.
Yeah, so thanks a lot for coming on the Two Time Labs podcast. And to our listeners, stay tuned. There's a little bit more coming up right after this message.
Thanks for listening into this episode of the Two Time Labs podcast. A big thank you to Penny Zenko. Her website is http://pennyzenker360.com. That's pennyzenker360.com. And if you visit, you can find out more about her book and the work that she's doing. If you liked today's episode, take a moment, visit iTunes, remember to like it, and also leave a comment. All the best to you, and until next time, this is Francis Wade signing out. See you then.